Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 29, and this week's guest is Chris Keeney. Chris is the author of a well-known pinhole camera book called Pinhole Cameras, a do-it-yourself guide. He comes and talks with us about that, and about a little bit of teaching that he does, and his love for pinhole photography. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show 29. Isn't this show 29, Andrew?
I thought you were going to say show 28, but what do I know? You could be right.
28 was last week.
Was it? They all start to blur into one, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
We're getting really old. Do you think we're here to stay now? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
we can keep getting great guests on. Then that'll be good. Have you had a good week?
Yeah, I've had a good week. I got a lot of film developed. I got out and did a little bit of shooting with my 4x5, the box turtle that I got from Todd.
Yep.
But my biggest hurdle was getting – I had a bunch of color film for my trip to Pennsylvania when I went to Niagara Falls that's been sitting in my work area just staring at me, and I can't move on to anything else until I, like, get something out of the way, you know?
Oh, I can. I'm a great procrastinator. Is that the right word?
Yeah. I can't, you know, just like, I can't move on until I get it done, because I don't like having a backlog of film sitting around, you know, stuff to develop. So
I have a backlog. I have a backlog of color like you, but that's only because I'm saving them up. I don't shoot much color like you. And yeah. I save it up and then buy a kit.
Well, that's what I did.
Yeah. So what kit are you using?
I'm using the color kit from the film photography.
Unicolor, is it?
Yeah, I think it's the Unicolor. Yeah, just the Blix and the Fixer, or the Blix or whatever is one film photography project, what it is, the FPP.
There's one I'm going to try next, is made by a company called Bellini, and they're imported by Nick and Trick Photography in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
And Bellini do a lot of lab chemicals for big, you know, laboratory setups, photo lab setups.
Cool.
So I've had some good reports about Bellini chemicals, so I'll be giving that a go.
All right. Well, this week we have Chris Keeney. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys
awesome
doing?
Hanging in there.
Hi, Chris.
good morning.
Lunch.
Yeah. Right.
It's quite the spread. Huh?
Technology.
Yeah, right. So Chris has published the pinhole book, which was how to build a pinhole, right?
Correct.
That's the one. And you've been doing pinhole for quite a while. If you take a second and maybe let everybody know a little bit more about yourself than what I know.
Well, I mean, I studied film in college before digital photography was even a thing. And so that's kind of what I knew from the beginning. And I went to school in upstate New York in Rochester and did a lot of darkroom work there. Again, this is before digital kind of came around. And I spent a lot of time working in the darkroom. That was a passion for me. And then I really didn't get into pinhole until way later in my career. I was working as a graphic designer in San Diego, and a friend of mine sent me a Holga camera, and I initially got into using that and started posting some of my Holga photos on Flickr, and slowly kind of gained some followers and friends. And one of my friends had started experimenting with hacking a Holga and putting a pinhole lens on it. And then I was looking at his photos. I said, wow, how did you do that? That's amazing. I've never seen anything like that. And that's what started it all. I had to make my own pinhole gun, is what I called it. And before I knew it, I was infected by the pinhole craze, if you will.
Right.
You know, it just kind of went from there, and it started as more of a hobby and turned into something bigger. And that's when I wrote the book. But it just seemed like I'd create one camera and was, oh, Caleb, what if I did this or what if I did that? So really curiosity is kind of what got me going. I thought it was amazing that you could makes a camera out of just anything that you could make light tight. So yeah, that's my background. I'm a portrait photographer. I use DSLRs in my business. I've been asked by some clients to do pinhole photos, but I warn them that it is a time intensive process. You never know what you're going to get. And everyone seems okay with cool. that. At least the people that understand film, and that process.
How does that fit in with your commercial work then, Chris? Because I see you do also commercial photography is your mainstay. Is that correct?
That's right. For a long time, I had my own business, photography business, and I did a lot of portraits and events and things like that. Now I work for full-time for the Salk Institute, which is a scientific biological study place. And it's a wonderful place. But anyways, how does it fit in with my work? Oh, boy. I have to find time to make it fit in. And the people that I work with, they're very curious about it, and they want me to photograph the Institute with my pinhole cameras. But to be honest, it's difficult for me to find time to do that. And it wasn't until last week where I'm like, you know what, I need to kind of break through and stop making excuses. So, okay, don't get mad at me here. I slapped a laser drilled pinhole to my DSLR and took some shots around campus, and I was pleasantly surprised, and it reminded me how wonderful and surprising how the images can be surprising. Like, you never know sure. what you're gonna get.
We have his name is Steven. I can't remember what his full name is, but we follow him on Instagram, and I think he listens to the show, and he does the same thing, but he uses the like a Fuji a little mirrorless camera. And he gets great right. pictures with it. I mean, the stuff he puts up, I mean, I think it's awesome looking. So
I think there's a few folks in the Facebook group who use DSLRs with body caps.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really care what you do. The only thing we care about is we just want to see what you are. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? We don't care what you do to get to the point of having your completed picture. We just like to see what you do.
Yeah, you know, I did some work for a company. They wanted me to make some effects for like their plugins for photographers. I'm not going to name the company, but it's pretty big. It's now owned by Google. But anyhow, they asked me, say, hey, Chris, I see you have a lot of interest and expertise in pinhole. Can you develop a plugin or filter that will give the effects of pinhole? And I remember in this meeting, I kind of laughed and the owner said, well, why can't you? I said, well, you can't really do that. I mean, you can try and make it look, you know, like a pinhole, but really a pinhole, you have an f-stop sometimes over 200 or, and,
yeah.
you know, camera's never going to have that. So you just never, so that's what makes it unique. And a lot of get the question, Chris, why take a pinhole? What's so special about that? Why not just take a picture with your regular camera? And then I have to explain to him the whole f-stop reason and how light works and filters through your camera. And in the past, you know, I never really liked doing DSLR pinhole body cap shots. I didn't like the focal length. It was kind of similar to, I think, like 50 millimeters. I like kind of the more wide angle effect you get with a lot of the homemade cameras.
Yeah, me too.
That I have.
I feel the same way. I got a camera from Diane Peterson. She sent me a 35 millimeter and a Nikon, and it already has a body cap on it that she made. So I put a roll of film in it, and I'm giving it a try, and we'll see.
Yeah, and I like the happy accidents that happen with film. You never know when you're going to get that light leak or, you know, the extreme vignetting and all these, you know, just film has that, I don't know, analog human feeling
sure.
to it, which digital, I don't know, maybe it's too perfect.
Have you experimented or tried any of the anamorphic style pinhole cameras, Chris, where you like with the...
No, I haven't, and I pinhole blender sent me a free camera years ago. And I, to be honest, and sadly, I just never tried it out. It all comes down to time.
Right.
And I know I'm making excuses. I'm intrigued by it because it really gives these interesting kind of wide panoramic look, which you'll never get from your phone.
Anything.
Anything, yeah.
Corey's asking for a reason because both him and I are trying to make these things. So I've made mine. It's sitting on my desk. It's made from a box of truffles that I had to eat first. Lovely chocolate truffles from Marks and Spencer's. And I've got this.
I think you should do it. Don't make any excuses.
All I'm waiting for now is tomorrow. I think it's going to be a nicer day. And I've seen a church, an old church with like a rounded end. And I'm going to go and plonk this thing next to it. I don't quite know what I'm doing with it, to be truthful. I'm going to put some film in it. And if I fill the whole thing with film, it's about 12 inches. It doesn't look like it'll be that big, but it is. Do you think, Corey and Chris, should I be wrapping film all the way around that circular thing or just around half of it? Or what's the idea?
I thought it was half.
I don't know. I know like whenever...
I don't know either.
Well, when Cesare does his film plane almost touches, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think he has like a circle.
So that's on 120 film, 6x19 or something. So, I mean, I would just say just give it a test. You know, put the biggest piece in there and then just keep cutting it down until you get past that point of vignetting that's unacceptable. You know what I mean? Because if it either is going to work or it's not, and half of it's going to be black, you know what I mean? Then you'll kind of know what size, you know, 5x7 or whatever.
I think I need to take some careful notes. I'll take some photographs of how I angle the camera away from the scene so the pinhole isn't pointing directly at it, but sort of at an angle it's got to be, isn't it?
I have no idea. That's my plan next, too. I kind of have my camera built. I got to do a little bit more to it, but I'm going to put some chemistry one day and just go outside and just start taking pictures and just point it straight up and just, you know, come back in and develop it. Nope, that doesn't work. And
I think you're supposed to, so if the pinhole, instead of pointing it at the subject, it's got to be oblique to the subject. So instead of pointing upwards, tilt it slightly towards the subject, but maybe not 45 degrees, if you know what I mean. And then just experiment. See, I bought my Chris Keeney book on pinhole cameras and then flicked through it. And I went and I threw it against the wall in anger because there was nothing in there about anamorphic cameras.
You know, this is the second time someone's asked me about that. I feel kind of inadequate not being able to answer it. What? And now you got me curious. I need to go out and...
That's two of us.
Cesare Barczak, who runs Vermeer cameras, he makes some lovely 6x9 and 6x12, I think,
12?
Anamorphic cameras, and they look just brilliant. And I need to save up for one of those, really.
And Jaina gets great results with hers. Isn't she using Cesare's camera?
Yeah, Jaina does. Yeah,
yeah.
And she started off making them, I think, as well, didn't she?
Yeah, maybe.
You need to go back to the earlier podcast. I think she explains it quite well.
Quit telling our guests what to do, Andrew. Come on.
Then you can just republish your book with like an extra chapter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny when we were working on that book. There were some supplies and things as you see in the back of the page, and the editor's like, you know, Chris, I think we need to make this a little bit more generic because these things just might not exist in the future. And Gachi was right. And, you know, Kodak took a dive shortly after the book was published, and a lot of the chemicals are hard to find. And and that's maybe that's a good segue, is a lot of people kind of shy away from pinhole photography because the supplies are expensive, and I don't know what the cost of a roll of 120 film, but I'm sure it's pushing $4. And what do you get, you know, 12 exposures or so out of a 6x6, you know, format? So
120 film is actually cheaper than 35mm, about, you know, depending on, you know, whatever. But it seems like it's cheaper than 35mm film now. For some reason.
Why? It is, but you just get fewer frames. That's what Chris is talking about.
Yeah. Well, sure.
Yeah.
But you get better quality with each frame, though. I mean, you get a, you know, 3x the image. So
I stopped, you know, unless it's in my Altoids Mint cameras, I just kind of stopped shooting 35mm. It's just very difficult to get quality images out of such a small negative. And to be honest, I kind of ditched 35 millimeter 120 and went straight to mostly using photographic paper. And to be honest, I enjoy that probably the most. And people are saying, God, photographic, really? And the reason being is that your success rate, and it's going to sound a little bit odd, is it's lower, and you have to try harder to get a good image from using photographic paper. But it's cheaper. I don't have to worry about images not turning out. When I do volunteer work with kids and stuff, that's what we use, photographic paper.
Chris,
what
there's
paper
a lot
do you use?
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of interest in the group, Chris, for paper negatives, including me. So. But tell us a little bit about it, about your process and the papers and materials.
Well, started writing the book, I did a project with a coffee can, and what I did is I drink a lot of espresso, so I figured I better do something with these. So I found that a 5x7 piece of photographic paper fit nicely into this espresso can. So I made a number of these cans
you mean vertically?
No, they fit in horizontally.
I know the ones you mean. Is it? It's I forget the name, the brand.
Lavazza.
Yes.
Lavazza.
Lavazza. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And anyways, so what I did is I loaded all of them up beforehand and got in my car and drove downtown
okay, hang on. So I have this picture in my mind of you getting in your car and driving downtown, and there being literally like, you can't see out any of the windows just because there's a Vaso coffee can stacked up beside your car.
And his eyes are his eyes are bulging out of his head because he's so high on caffeine.
Exactly. No, that's it. That's exactly what happened. But actually, the story gets a little bit more interesting because I wanted to make these cans kind of unique. So that I could identify, one can from the other. And because every camera has its own kind of unique characteristic, if you will. So sure. Here I am, taking a picture of this, building. And I think I was probably on private property at the time. And the security officer comes over and he's looking at me, and this can's kind of painted black. And he thinks I don't know what he thinks. He thinks it's some sort of weapon. And I had to explain to him it was a camera, and he kind of looks at me odd, and so that was the first thing. And what I had done is I had created kind of this mobile changing room. I had a light changing bag, and so here I am on this park bench with a light changing bag on my lap, and I'm fumbling around inside this thing, changing the paper out inside of the bag, and people are looking at me like, what is that man doing? right. I won't go there, but, it was, I got from it. But it's a lot of work, you really got to be dedicated to the task if you're going to use paper. Paper has what the ISO of, I think, 6 or 8 or something like that.
3 or whatever.
Yeah, it's really small. And you really appreciate what Katie Cook, is a pinhole photographer in Scotland, she refers to it as slow light. I love that term. I've referred to it many times before. The idea that light is just slowly kind of creeping into the camera and making exposure. It's kind of like watching a coffee brew or something like that. And
sure.
I like that. It's and it reminds you that to just slow down and take notice more often. So anyhow.
Good point.
What papers are you using, Chris?
That's a good question. I've found that multi-grade papers are not good. And I use graded papers, specifically grade 2. And you can still find them. They're hard to find. I get mine from Freestyle Camera, which is in the U.S. But reason being is that graded papers are designed to be used with filters in the darkroom. And so if you use, let's say, multi-grade paper, then your images are going to be really high contrast. Whereas if you used grade 2 paper, you're going to get more of a flat image with better tonality. And I find that it's easier to to get just a more balanced photo.
Well, that's interesting because I can Andrew Sanderson last week was talking about printing his paper negatives in his enlarger, so that's what I'm going to do. So then you can apply your filtration anyway, or if you want to do contact prints from your negative, you can lay contrast acetate over top of
right on top of the paper.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I'm intrigued. See, I've only just started playing with paper negatives, and I use what I had in the darkroom, which was Ilford Multigrade Pearl. And now, I admittedly, it was for the first time I tried it. It was in an 8x10 camera. But, a previous guest had sent me in the post, I hasten to add, and it was well exposed in the middle. It was a very contrasty day, but I did get quite a lot of light fall off. But you see, Chris, I hear what you say, but when you expose multi-grade paper in an enlarger with no filtration, it comes out as grade 2.
See, a lot of times what I'm doing is I'm not using the negative in the enlarger. A lot of times the pieces of paper that I've used are cut to unusual sizes. And I kind of like that. I like that sometimes they're ripped, you know, I don't have time. So I, you know, rip the papers so it fits into the camera or, you know, maybe the paper's donated to me. And so I have to make it a different size or I just don't have time. Like when I'm working with kids and they come in, they need the photo put in their camera or whatever. So I end up scanning the negatives and, I know, you know, people don't want to hear that.
We all do that. I do that.
Yeah, totally.
And I would shy away from using pearl finished paper, because pearl finish has this kind of texture. So I only use matte finish, papers,
Do you find any particular brands work well for you, Chris?
Whatever I can find. I love Ilford paper. I'm trying to remember the name of the. Actually, I think it's a brand that Freestyle has. I use it a lot, only because it's grade 2.
Yeah, they used to have their graded paper. Wouldn't that used to be called Gallery paper? Is that changed? No, it used to be Gallery, GALERARE.
I don't know.
I think so.
I used to use a Oriental paper a lot. I loved it, but it's impossible to find.
Seagull. Is that the Seagull stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Good stuff. But it's like,
go ahead.
Oh, it seems like as soon as I fall in love with some type of film or paper, or whatever, that becomes obsolete. And it kind of discourages me when that happens. But right. It seems like there's a resurgence into analog processes. And I think, maybe this is a good segue here. People, when they get into digital photography, they find that the world is just saturated with these amazing images. Every time I go on Instagram, I'm like, God, wow, that is a great photo. That's another great photo. And so people want to find a unique voice. I'm not saying they get into it because Pinhole is different. Well, it is different, but they're feeling, well, maybe this will be my unique voice, and maybe my voice will be heard over the, you know, just a crowd of people saying, hey, look at my image.
That takes us back to motivation, really, doesn't it? Why we do these things, and we all are motivated by different things. What motivates you to make Pinhole images when your day job is taking, you know, digital pictures of things and people?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because really to make Pinhole photos, you need time, you need a good subject matter, and a lot of times we become kind of jaded with our surroundings. And so I find that most of the time traveling is what inspires me to grab one of my Pinhole photos or cameras and make Pinhole photos. And you'll see a lot of the photos on my website. A lot, not a lot, but many of them are taken when I'm traveling. And the reason being is that I'm going to places I've never been before, and maybe I want a unique perspective of that place. I want to, again, it comes down to making time. You know, a lot of times traveling with my family, and And to make a good pinhole, you got to, you know, set up your tripod and make sure, you know, make sure that the camera's in the right position. And by then, you know, my kids are like, Dad, let's go. And my wife's kind of giving me the look. And
oh, yeah.
So I don't know. People with children understand that.
You know. Whenever I take my pinhole camera out, everybody in my family goes, oh, it's like a collective sigh. Oh, and everybody like sits down, you know, it's like, they're just like, oh, come on.
Yeah. But you know, what's interesting is now that my children are larger, now that they're
eat lots of donuts.
Right. Now that they're older, they are now appreciating what I did back then. And they're like, hey Dad, how come you never use this camera? How come you don't do that anymore? And that in and itself, that inspires me. Because to be honest with you, I just went full bore with pinhole for a number of years. It seemed like a decade. And just like anything, if you like a muscle that you exercise too much, it just it loses its elasticity. And sure. So I think it's important for people to exercise, I don't know, constrain or just don't do it so much that it becomes boring for you in the future. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's kind of like what I'm going through right now. That's why I've been using my Holgas and trying, you know, other things and just kind of still doing it. Cause I'm in a really small area, so I see the same thing every day. You know what I mean? So after a while, it kind of gets to be like, what else can I go take a picture of around here? It's like, well, I've taken 5 shots of everything around here already. You know what I mean? So it's kind
of
like,
I think that's the beauty of having the darkroom as well, though, because it opens up so many other creative possibilities, you know, to interpret things around you, interpret the familiar in an unfamiliar way, I think, you know, in the darkroom.
I've found that people are probably the most interesting things to take pinhole photographs of. And mind you, that's coming from a portrait photographer. But the problem, maybe it's why it's so magical, is that people move, that it's almost impossible for them to stand still for a long exposure. And funny, and I kind of stumbled upon this via kind of a fascination with taking pinholes of goats. I know this is kind of it's quite amusing. When my kids were younger, I would take them to the zoo. San Diego has an amazing zoo, as everyone knows. And part of the zoo, there's a petting zoo, or a goat, goats and sheep and whatnot. So I naturally had my pinhole camera with me at the time. And I'm like, oh, let's just plop this thing down and take a couple pictures of this goat. Well, while the shutter was open, mind you, the shutter is a piece of tape, the goat moved. And when I got back and developed the film, I started looking at these images and I said, wow, these are great, because the goat will stand still for a second or half a second, then it moved its head. So it created these kind of ghostly shots of these ghosts, of these goats. So
you're lucky it didn't eat the camera.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I tried one time.
Animals are great. I was walking in the fields at the back of where I live last year or the year before, and there's some horses in a paddock, and I had my zero image camera with me. And those horses, when they see somebody, they come over because they're curious. They think they're going to get, you know, something to eat. And so they came right over to me, and I sat the zero image on the rail and just opened it up. And I thought, I've no idea, really. But there was this fairly solid image and then these 2 or 3 ghost head images. And it's just an awesome picture, really. I love it.
Yeah. That's kind of like Alex and Alex Purcell and his geese.
Swans.
Swans, well, that's what it is, yeah.
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 No, I was with Alex. I was with Alex in Cardiff when we were taking pictures of swans. And his came out a lot better than mine, but he did get a lot closer to this swan, and it did hiss at him, and tried to eat his pinhole camera.
That's funny.
See, that's so, right. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen with the animals.
Speaking of kids, Chris, you were talking about spending time with some kids, teaching them pinhole and doing workshops. Do you do that a lot? Is it just kind of something you do on the weekends, or?
Well, unfortunately, it has to be done during the week when the kids are in school. Now, I'm I no longer have my own business and I work for the quote unquote man now. I have to take time off to do that. But in the past, I used to do it a lot. And I just got a request from the school that I've worked in the past to do it again. So I think I'm going to do it because I love it. I really do. And the reason why I love it is because, let me give you a little backstory.
Sure.
Some cameras were donated to this class. I think they're sixth graders. And they are paint cans. And I think they were like 20 of them are donated. And they take paper negatives. And those have to be cut or torn or whatever. Anyways, we converted the janitor's room. That's what it was. The only room in the school that I could find that we could make light tight. And I bring a small red bulb and I screw that into this kind of stand up light. And we put a towel under the door so the light doesn't leak under. Anyways, initially I'll go into the classroom and explain the process of pinhole photography to them. And I get a lot of questions from the kids. It's see in their eyes. They just, they can't wait to get out and walk around with their. And so what they do is they kind of break into groups and we, and I've learned in the past that there's no food in the dark room, because I remember one time some kid came in there and there was, after I opened up the door, there's Cheerios all over the floor, and Cheerios and the developer. And so you have to, yeah. And there's a lot of noise. So kids are all yelling at one time. Anyways, what I think is the most exciting part is after they've gone out onto the playground and I've given them some guidance onto what makes a good photo and what subject matter. And they're usually escorted by a teacher. Then they come back into the dark room or janitor's room, whatever you want to call it. And I have the trays all lined up and everyone's kind of pushing and shoving. And we drop the paper into the developer and everyone's kind of looking in awe as the image starts to appear. And, oh, that's my image. No, that's my image. And then, you know, the room just lights up with – so. You know, the long and short of it is for me, I get excited seeing them excited. And that, if anything, is inspiration for me to go out and keep doing it myself. And I like seeing young children be inspired about photography. Maybe this is the first picture they've taken, you know, outside of their, you know, phone or digital camera. But I think that maybe this is their first introduction into analog photography. And some of them don't even know what that means. You know, this is film was something that it was before their time. And so, I don't know. I like that. It's refreshing.
Do you have your own children, Chris?
I do. We have a daughter who's 20 and my son who's 18. And they've been subjects in my photos for years.
Yeah, me too.
And I at first they didn't like it. They said, "Oh, Dad," I said, "Oh, hey, Colin, stand over there." And he's, "Oh, Dad, not another picture." And they never liked it because a lot of times they would never end up seeing it. It wasn't until after, you know, my book was published and they saw the picture in the book, they were like, "Oh, wow, that's cool. Dad's cool." But back then it was like more of a hindrance, you know, like, oh, really? Another one of those pictures that we never see.
Right.
So, yeah, kids are great for that, for keeping you inspired and good subjects for your pictures. They seem like, but I would say don't overdo it, you know, so they don't want to pose for you in the future.
Every time I'd get a new camera, including pinholes, but whether it was instant photography or 6x9 or something, before my daughter went off to university, incidentally, she was at UGA last year, so we spent some time out near Corrie. But my daughter Georgia, who went to the University of Georgia, it got very confusing. She's been my model constantly, you know, and she's great, and she's got a love of film photography now, which I'm really pleased about. But not pinhole.
Well, you know, a lot of times kids will say, "Well, why do I want to waste my time with film?" And you know, the unless they have a way to process it themselves, a lot of times you have to send it off. Yeah. And it just seems like a hassle. We kind of live in this instant world nowadays where, you know, people just get used to seeing something right away. And if you want to post it on your Instagram or Facebook or whatever your social media it is that you use, that takes some time and effort. And I have to confess, I don't think I have any pinhole photos on my Instagram feed. And a lot of the reason is that when I started that, I'd already kind of departed my, you know, craze into the pinhole realm. But it doesn't mean that I don't like it anymore. It just means that it's more difficult for me to put images on there.
Right.
And
you should start a separate Instagram channel, and then you can just put all your pinhole work on there.
That's a brilliant idea.
It's fun to have three different Instagram pages, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it can get a bit troublesome. I have two.
Yeah.
Chris, I was reading with interest your artist statement. I don't know when you wrote it, but it spoke to me in so many different ways. And perhaps I can just read a little bit for the folks out there, and then just perhaps you could tell me what was in your mind as you wrote it. I think it's fairly self-explanatory, but let's just read the first couple of sentences. If the essence of life is change, then I imagine its opposite, immutability, must be a form of death. I see my photography as both an affirmation of and reaction to the inexorable process of growth and decay, the wheel of life. My images try to play with the mystery and absurdity of the permanent state of impermanence facing us in the world. And the kinds of images that catch my eye are themselves always changing, as is my technique, as I experiment with the ever-evolving technologies and media available today. So that's really interesting, isn't it? It's this world we live in, which is constantly changing. And Dave, you wrote it. Do you want to expand a bit about change?
Sure.
And how your photography fits into it?
It reminds me, I know that maybe this isn't the right form for this answer to or response, but when I am working events and I see an image or a subject matter at that event, I say to myself, Chris, take the picture now.
Yeah.
Because if you think you're going to come back to that image later, it might be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say, guys, 9 out of 10 times,
it will be
gone when I come. It's gone. And so that's what I mean by impermanence. You know, things are constantly changing. And photography is one of this rare art form where we can actually kind of seize time. And that's why snapshots are so valuable to people. Like, let's say your house is on fire, and what are you going to grab? Well, nowadays you grab your phone or it's saved to the cloud. But in the past, it was your photo albums. And a lot of times you can't recreate those images. Those are memories that are just so special. So to me, that's photography is special that way. And pinhole photography is unique in the sense that a lot of times these images that we create are so unique that if you were to try and go back to recreate that image with the same camera, the same, you know, location, and it's going to be different. It'll never be the same. It's like you can never step in the river, the same place in the, what was that saying? You never can step in a river the same place at the same time. It's always changing. The river is constantly moving. So, and that's the way I see life, is that, you know, it's up to us as image makers to capture these special moments in life. I mean, we're all aging. I heard you guys talking when I dropped in. And, oh, God, I feel like I'm getting old. We are getting old. I mean, no one's going to turn back to the clock so you can be 20 again or wherever it is. It's like now is the time.
Maybe I'm just a bit weird, but do you ever have that feeling?
Yeah, you're definitely weird.
Do you ever have that? Sometimes I think, like, that conversation we've just had, us three sitting here, you know, in this bar like we are drinking our beer, that's gone now. That's in the past, never to be reclaimed again. And it's just lost. You know, the present is now the past. Those words I just said are now gone. It's the past and it's gone forever. And it's like, it's kind of what you're talking about, isn't it? It's like,
it's not gone forever. I just recorded it.
Well, you got me there. Yes. Yes. So I can, this podcast is like a little time capsule. But you quote Henri Cartier-Bresson, don't you, Chris? And we photographers deal in things which are continually vanishing. And when they vanish, there's no contrivance on earth that can make them come back. We cannot develop and print a memory. I love that. We cannot develop and print a memory.
No, I mean, it really is. And creativity is one of those things where I wrote this statement the other day. It says, self-doubt is the reaper of creativity. And what I mean by that is that we're constantly doubting ourselves that we can create something that is worthy of attention. And, you know, now that we live in this kind of world of social media, people don't think something is worthwhile unless it has X amount of likes or views or whatever it is. And so they post a picture, even to themselves, they might think it's really special, but if it doesn't get the attention of other people and the affirmation that it's special, then all of a sudden they start to self-doubt if they should continue doing that. And so this voice inside of them constantly gets drowned out by all these other voices. And for me, you really just got to be yourself. You have to trust that whatever you imagine in your own mind's eye is worthy of bringing to the table. And I struggle with that myself because even at my job, everything that I do is going to be criticized, and the world is full of haters. They're always going to be there. They're always going to say, you know, oh, I've seen a better angle of that, or that can be done better. And that just kind of erodes away at our confidence to create. And
sure.
So I don't know. Maybe that's why people are coming back to analog processes, because these processes give us a voice that truly is unique. And there's I don't care. So-and-so can never create the same image that you guys did on that day. So.
And us old guys are becoming really trendy now. You see,
you've always been trendy, Andrew, with all those stories of Moses and everything. But, you know, well, I mean, if you think about it, once you have prints in your hands or you have negatives, you really don't have to do anything to view them or look at them. You can just instantly pick them up. You don't have to wait for your computer to boot up. You don't have to, you know, you can just enjoy them.
Well, that's it's interesting you say that. I had made some notes for this podcast, and I was going to read them off my phone or look. I made the choice to print them out. I like holding something in my hand and looking at it and making notes on it. And one of the nice things about analog process is that, and I've always liked this about DIY pinhole photography, it is the only photographic creative process where it involves a photographer from start to finish. Meaning you create the camera yourself, you load the camera yourself, you process the film, you print it, you know, that every part of the way you are part of the process. Whereas digital, you know, really all you do is press a button and then you process it on your computer. That's not, you know, you're not making your own DSLR. So that's one of the reasons why I was drawn towards making my own camera. A lot of people are scared of that, and I was in the beginning, but once you do it a couple times, that fear kind of melts away.
Sure.
Did you want to talk a bit about some of the cameras you've made, Chris, and you know, the applications that you've used them in?
Sure. Well, I remember when I started getting into making my own cameras, I had a friend of mine who says, Chris, you really need to, you know, you need to find a container that is unique and interesting in and itself, not just, you know, an oatmeal can. That's not very interesting. So I said, well, I was looking at the store and I came across a Spam can. I was like, oh God, that's brilliant, you know? And so I came home and I turned it into a camera, and I asked my wife, I said, what should I call it? She's like, why don't you call it the Spamra? And I'm like, oh, that's great. So on with the Spamra, and it's just an awful container to make a pinhole camera from, because the can is really, not very high quality. It's got this film over the can, so it makes it difficult to put the pinhole in there. So I'm going to discourage people from using a Spam can. It's not one of my favorites, but it has quite the following. At least it's cool. Did.
But it looks great, doesn't it?
That's awesome.
You've got a wing nut poking out the top with some gaffer's tape and.
How are you loading
the film into that? Does the lid come off?
The it loads from the bottom.
Oh, does it?
And I kind of Frankensteined another camera to get the parts that I needed for the film advance. Really, that's what it comes down to when you make a 120 camera: is what is your film advance? How do you engineer that so you advance the film from one frame to the other? And really, with the wing nut, it wasn't a very good solution because it would get loose and I would have to tighten the nut on the bottom. It's not a perfect science, but it was fun while
it worked.
It worked.
So we have a Spam camera and we have a truffle camera. Truffle cam.
Yeah. So, to be honest, one of my favorite homemade cameras is the Mexicanon. And the reason why it's called that is while I was in Mexico camping, I came across this old chili can and it was all rusted and everything. And I picked it up and threw it in my backpack and I got home and immediately started to turn it into a camera. And what I found, and this is what makes it special to me, is that it fit a business card size paper negative perfectly. And the reason why it's called a Mexicanon is that at my local camera shop, I said, hey, you guys have any old lens caps that you're not using? And the guy's digging through this box and he pulls out this Canon lens cap and I pop it on top of the chili can. Oh, it fit perfect. And so the Mexicanon was born. So I had this idea that why not create a series of photos that were business card size? So on one side of the card would be a pinhole photo. And then on the other side, I would rubber stamp my name and address or whatever.
Cool.
And so every business card had this kind of unique paper negative photo on the back. Well, that all sounded great, but the problem is that I fell in love with the images so much I didn't want to give them away.
Right? People are using Instax Mini for that, aren't they, at the moment? Some people are using Instax Mini for as a business card.
Yeah, and I love that camera too. Again, here we go, resurgence into instant type photographs that you can actually touch and hold.
Yep.
And I know my kids love that camera, and I don't like that they love it because every time they press the button, it's a buck or something like that.
But on the grand scale, I mean, it's a buck for their absolute contentment, and they're just completely entranced by it,
I was speaking to somebody online this week, I think, and I said, look, you really can't put a price on this because. I say this to my wife when I've just bought something, because this is our creativity, this is our outlet, and analog is expensive, but can you put a price on something that you can create from start to finish and hold in your hand? I don't think so.
With very little, sure.
It's funny. Someone asked. There was a child was saying this the other day about the camera roll. They had this question, why was called the camera roll on your phone? And I said, well, right? It's called, they don't understand what a camera roll is or roll of film. And I think it's funny how old processes are kind of infused into new technologies. Now, I know that was kind of a strange segue, but I think holding something in your hand as opposed to it being viewed on your screen is a big deal.
That Mexicanon is a horrible looking camera, I have to say, Chris.
Thank you.
I've just seen a picture of it and I thought, what is that? And then I said, oh yeah, that's the Mexican.
So Chris, it has a tripod mount. I added that later.
That's pretty nice.
So I recommend JB Weld to all those DIY camera makers out there.
Yeah. I was watching the other, as well as your book on pinhole photography DIY. I bought one as well by, oh, the guy's name's just gone out of my head. Anyway, I'll remember in a moment. But his book is making a pinhole camera, and then he takes it and uses it to photograph it in context. So it's like a paint can. Then he's photographing someone painting his house, you know, and he made a pinhole camera out of a gas can, and he's in the fuel station, and he's linking it. Joe Babcock, that's it. Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. And Joe was actually in the book, or some of his photos were, and I think he, how do I say this? Makes an example of how important it is. The actual container itself has meaning, and
yes,
there's a lot, right. And that's important too. I think when you make your own cameras, it's not, you know, there's a lot of things that you could make it. It doesn't make it special. And there was another guy, Wayne Belger. He made some cameras out of like skulls, and they were very elaborate, and very, they were a lot better looking than the Mexicanon. But but you know, again, for those people out there listening that want to make their own camera, I think a lot of times they get so hung up on how the camera looks. That's not really important. It's not about the camera. Some of the best images that I've gotten have been from, you know, cigar boxes and things of. Even a cigar box looks interesting, but it doesn't. It's not about the camera. It doesn't have to be, at least.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. It could be made from the most elaborate wood on the earth, or it could be, you know, a shoebox. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It all comes out the same. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, maybe this is a nice time to talk about actually making the pinhole itself.
Yeah.
A lot of times people think that, the diameter of the pinhole will work on any size camera. Well, that's not true. There's actually an equation to figure that out, and you can use calculators online to get the diameter. And I found, all the pinholes I make now are done with it's a drill it's actually like a jeweler's drill. There's a name for it. I can't think of it right now. But it has these little micro drill bits that you put in.
Diane uses them, doesn't she?
Yeah, I was going to say Diane or Heather was talking about using those, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
They really do a good job allowing you to drill the right diameter pinhole. And when I tell people, the rounder the pinhole it is, and the cleaner it is, the sharper the image is going to be. And I've tossed a lot of pinholes because of, you know, maybe they come out oval, or they're punctured. I didn't hone them. And that's another thing is pinhole with really fine grit sandpaper on both sides to get it so that the material is as thin as possible. The thinner the material, the better.
Yeah.
And I use copper for my pinholes. So maybe I'm getting a little bit deep.
No.
And maybe people don't really care about making their own pinholes, but it really is an art form in itself.
We have kind of a spread out view on that, I guess, because a lot of people make their own pinholes, and a lot of people, you know, get them from James and a couple, yep, and Todd. I think Todd makes his too, you know. So we have kind of a half and half with that.
Well,
you know,
James buys his. He gets somebody to laser cut drill his, doesn't he? Todd Schlemmer makes his in the similar way to you, I think, Chris, as does Cesare Bartchek. He makes them by hand. So it's really interesting, but you're right. It's the app. It's the shape of the pinhole. It's the thinness, and it's the combining that diameter of the pinhole with the optimum focal length. And then if you veer away from that, things become either fuzzier or less distinct. But you just have to get the optimum. If that's what you want, that Mr. Pinhole app is very good for that. And Mr. Pinhole app gives quite a lot of explanation as well. So, you know, when it asks you to put certain data in, then if you click on the little question mark, it explains why it's important that you do such things.
Yeah.
I love that app. I use it for drilling my own pinholes to figure out where you measure the distance from the front of the box or can to the back, and you put it in meters, I think it's in. It gives you the size, diameter of the pinhole you have. But if you make your pinhole with a needle or beading needle or whatever, sewing needle, you really are, it's very difficult to know what the diameter of the shaft of the needle. It's not the needle itself, the tip of the needle. It's the shaft of the needle or the diameter of that matters the most. Mm-hmm. And really the only way to find that out is to scan the pinhole and measure it in Photoshop. So that's time consuming.
Now, I'll tell you who was talking about that. The other great resource for making cameras is the Homemade Camera podcast. I don't know mm-hmm. Graham and Nick run that. Mm-hmm. And pinhole often comes up because they spend a whole podcast examining things like how do we transport the film? How do we mount the lens? You know, and so it's really, really fascinating. And they keep coming back to pinholes and making pinholes. And I think it was either, I don't know which one was talking about it. They were talking about gradually pressing through and then sort of sanding down. And
yeah, where you kind of make a little dimple and then sand it down and then push through and then sand it down. And,
but they were measuring it. Goodness me, I've got a memory of a sieve. But they were effectively using scanning techniques, I think, to measure, work out how many thousandths of a millimeter or inch or whatever that.
Too much for me. I just put it on there and take a picture.
Well, you know that.
Well, you can always do that. Yeah.
And you know that's fine. You know that's how I started, Corey. I remember in the beginning, I just found a piece of old soda can and punctured it, you know, with a needle and stuck it on the front of a Holga and off I went. And I still got images. Now, as I progressed, I realized that I could get better images if I, you know, better metal and thinner metal. And if I hone the hole but I guess what I'm getting at is that all this process of measuring and making sure it's the right diameter and all that stuff, it's so daunting for people who are just getting into pinhole photography. My sure. suggestion is just do it. Don't worry about all the semantics in the beginning. Test your camera before you go out and spend a bunch of time. Make sure that the camera's light tight, you know, assuming that these are homemade cameras. I can't tell you how many problems I've had with kids and high school kids as well, where they make their own camera out of a shoebox or whatever it is, and they come back with a completely dark negative, and they say, "Chris, why is this happening? Is the pinhole the wrong side?" I said, "No, your box is leaking like a sieve." And before they even went out to make the exposure, it leaked all over their paper.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So,
that's true.
It's like, who was I talking to? Oh, someone was selling some paper on eBay and they'd, to show how good the paper was, they'd opened the box up and they thought it was like inkjet paper, you know?
This paper's brand new. Look at it.
That's hilarious. Well, you know, another thing I want to say about paper negatives is I like that I can process them in my bathroom.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife might not think that's so great because oftentimes I might get fixer on the sink or on the floor. And so you have to be careful about that if you're using your family bathroom to process your negatives in. But I like the fact that I can test a camera that I just made. I use big pieces of visqueen, which is black tarp, plastic opaque tarp to cover the doors. And I use mm-hmm. push pins over the top and painter's tape to make sure it's. And then, you know, I pre-mix all my chemicals and I pour them into trays. And so that's nice. It makes it more, attractive to make your, to try out a new process if you can actually see it right away. Whereas with film, unless you're knowledgeable already about processing film, film can be tricky to process, especially if you're trying to roll it onto that canister or whatever.
Sure.
I don't know. Have you had any issues with that, Corey and Andrew, with processing your own film? Or?
Well, there are only the usual ones. I mean, when I first started processing film, it was with in a changing bag, and if you with those plastic reels, and then moisture is your enemy. So if you start sweating, you know, then
it can the film be, sweats.
The film sweats. Then once those reels get wet or damp, then it's difficult. These days, I use stainless steel reels for 120, and they're an acquired taste, but I just love the fact
Boo.
That you can.
I hate
you
those
can,
things.
You can.
Mm, me
well,
too.
you're using the wrong ones, because if you use Hughes, Hewes. And they're made just down the road from where I live. They're perfect, and you can use them. You can use them when the spirals are wet, and I never get any air bubbles. Sometimes I get some air bubbles depending on how good my agitation is or too vigorous. But the stainless steel I just find are just great.
I've only had problems. Yeah, just loading film, but any cameras that I've made, I normally use X-ray film, so I can develop and handle that.
You're going to send me some, aren't you?
A red Cephalite. No, I'm not, actually, Andrew. You're not getting any of it.
I saw some on eBay yesterday. There was. I need to talk to my friend Andrew Sanderson, who's promised to send me some film. But he said, I think, is there like green and blue X-ray film? Do you know the difference, Corey?
Yeah, there's different. Yeah, there's a green and a blue. I don't know much about the blue. I've only ever used the green.
Mm-hmm.
And it's double-sided. It's the
scratch.
Fuji.
So you can scratch it.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
super scratchy.
There's a load of it on eBay, and it seems very reasonably priced as a UK seller, but it was a green Fuji stuff that was all over eBay.
When I ordered that box, I said, oh, this is a great deal. 100 sheets
yeah.
for $30. And now I'm looking at counting the box. I'm like, 79. 80. I'm like, oh my God, this stuff is like...
yeah, send some to me.
It's never going to go away. You know,
send some to me.
Be, nothing's going to be left but cockroaches and X-ray film after the Twinkies and cockroaches and X-ray film. There's so much of it. Yeah.
It seemed quite a good deal on eBay. It wasn't. I forget how much it was when I was looking last night.
Well, you can order it directly from the distributor and get, I mean, you know, just as good as a deal. I don't know. You can get it in all kinds of sizes, too. I mean, you can get it in all kinds of crazy sizes. But all right. Well... Chris, thank
yes,
you
sir.
So much for
oh, you bet.
Giving us some time on your Saturday morning. It's early over there, I know.
Oh, it's not that early. Actually, I'm used to waking up early. I like to surf in the morning before I go to work, so I'm an early bird.
Oh, that reminds me. I saw that.
The underwater pitch as well, wasn't it?
I get in the ocean a lot also, and I was wondering if you have, in your mind, come up with a plan to get a pinhole camera in the water. I've been thinking about how I can do it, and I just can't.
It's been done. I know Wayne Belger did it. He had an underwater pinhole camera, and he actually went. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say. Yeah, I saw that. That's the big with the big. He has this humongous housing or
yes.
big gray housing on it. Yeah, because I have a camera that I use, my digital camera that I use when I go out and take pictures of waves and stuff. And that thing is heavy, so, and it's much, much smaller than what he's using, so I could not even imagine trying to swim with that thing.
Well, yeah, he submerged himself in a tank at the La Jolla Aquarium.
That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, really, to be honest, pinhole photography is hard enough, but to make it light, light-tight, watertight,
tight?
Oh my God, that's a lot of tight. And to actually be able to access the shutter, at, you know, at the bottom
yeah.
and then having enough light, I think would, well, it's interesting. I think it would open up a whole new realm of pinhole photography. But, you know, to be honest, I barely have time to do the things that I want to do. And
sure.
And really, I'm going to circle back to this. Whatever people can do to make the process easy for them to do it, the more likely they're going to do it. And so what I do, and I've said this before to other people, is just make a kit. If a bag, a camera bag that is totally dedicated to that camera. And in that kit, you have everything you need to do to make photos, your cable release, your tripod, whatever. And it makes it easier to travel with it.
Just grab it and go.
Grab and go, yeah. And 'cause, you know, really – maybe things have changed since I've done pinhole photography, but I find that the cameras that I want to operate and use the most are the ones that are easy to use. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like the Pinholga. It's, you know, it's really, a lot of times I don't even mount it to a tripod. I just stick it on the ground and put my foot on top of it and open and close the shutter and away I go.
Right.
And
do you have other commercial, as well as homemade pinhole cameras, Chris? Do you have other commercially, like the Reality or Zero, any of those?
I have three Zero Image, and I love them all. My favorite is the 6x9 multi-format, because I can use a cable release with that. But my 6x12 is a full-on manual shutter. But I love that format. 6x12 is a great format, and it'll definitely eat through your film supply pretty quickly, though.
Yeah, yeah, I know that for a fact.
Right? Do you have a 6x12?
I had a 6x17. I used to use a 6x17 Reality, sort of made by James. Uh-huh. And a roll of 120, you only get four shots. I mean, and it's like, boom.
Yeah.
I have the 6x12 Reality, and that's a lovely. It is a lovely format. That 2:1 aspect ratio is perfect, I think, for many landscapes.
Yeah,
but I like that. six by nine is good as well. I've just been developing some 6x9 negatives and printing some today, actually, and I think that's a nice size when it's printed.
Yeah,
I like it. Yeah, and I like the fact that I can make it multi-format. You can just pull these little wood sliders out, and I can make it 6x12 if I want to. So that's pretty cool.
Definitely. Awesome. Well, Chris, if you want to let everybody know where they can find you at, take a look at what you're doing.
Well, I mean, it's just Google my name, and it's just basically my website is chriskeeney.com. You know, I have a few pinhole stuff on there, but really my mainstay is people. I focus, no pun intended, on people. And really, I made this podcast has inspired me to kind of get back in the saddle again and to make some image.
Yeah.
I think it's time. You know, everyone asks me about my, I run into people and they say, oh, yeah, you're the pinhole guy. And I'm like, God, it's funny how you become known for something, right? Little did I know, I spend most of my time making pictures of people, but...
Andrew's the salt print guy.
I haven't mentioned it once this episode.
I like that.
You see?
Salt print. Yeah. I like it. Those are cool. Awesome. You know, I'll say this one thing. Speaking of salt and prints, I had an old 620 camera that I converted to pinhole, and I took it to the beach, and I photographed it. And you can see one of these images. Well, what happened is that while I was making the image, a wave came in, a small wave, where these kids were, and it got into the camera, and salt water got onto the film. Well, I'll tell you, it made for some interesting shots. Yeah, because the salt water affected the film in a way when I processed it. And so I don't know.
Well, a lot of people are souping deliberately their films, aren't they, in all sorts of fluids.
Yeah,
including bodily fluids. And then drying it, and then shooting on top of it. You know, so they're sort of pre-treating it, drying it out, reloading it, and shooting it. And sometimes with putting it in the dishwasher, and goodness knows.
Or whatever.
I think that's great. Another reason why analog processes are so exciting. I will leave you guys with this. There's something really special about not knowing. We know so many things, but not knowing, it's like there's some magic to that. It's what keeps us guessing, and wanting. I think it's a Freudian thing almost. There's more allure in not knowing than there is in knowing. So,
and not knowing is becoming a commodity. You know what I mean? It's kind of just getting to the point now where it's rare for you to be in a situation where you just don't know. You know, it's like everything is always so mapped out, and
everything has to be an answer for everything, and everybody has to have an answer for everything. And there are still some things in life where, you know what, just sit back and wonder.
Google Maps, you can't get lost anymore. You know what I mean? It's like
That's why I always look forward to going off the grid somewhere and being disconnected and not being able to be bothered. But I'll say the only thing in life that is constant is change. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm going to change, you're going to change, everyone changes, and everyone has, I know I said this before, everyone has a unique voice. No two people are alike, and I think you have to believe that your uniqueness is worth being heard. And sure. And so if you're going to do it via pinhole or whatever it is, and then so be it.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, okay.
I hope I haven't been too many wordy.
No, you're awesome, man.
You've been a great guest. Yeah. Corey, where can we find your photography?
Instagram. I'm Pinhole Cannon. We used to have a show page on Instagram, but I've closed that out and just rolled kind of going to start doing it on my Pinhole Cannon Instagram page and Facebook. We have a Lenses Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah, Chris, and now we're friends on Facebook. I'll add you, or you can join the Facebook group. If you apply to join, you have to ask a question, otherwise we don't let you in.
I like that.
We don't let anybody into our Facebook group, you know, they have to pass a test.
I think that it's good, because then you know these people are worthy, right?
Right.
Well, we just want to encourage a group that's good natured and focused on pinhole work. Even if people are just interested in finding out more, you know.
Yeah. And then there's Flickr. We have a Flickr group too.
And you've been, I've seen you there, Corey. You've started a question about anamorphic cameras.
I told you I was coming. I was just waiting to close out that Instagram, that second Instagram page. Everything was just kind of running together for me. I felt like I was liking everyone's pictures two or three times, with the Instagram thing under each different. Then I just was like, this is just too much. So,
well, folks, you can also find us on Twitter at The Lensless. And that's mainly me, because Corey doesn't do Twitter either. So if you want to come and join me on Twitter and take the mickey out of Corey, then he'll never know.
Never know.
And you can find me and my photography at Warboys Snapper in various places.
Yeah. _ Pinhole.
Well, yeah, I have. Yes, I do have two. Warboys Snapper _ Pinholes, if you just want to look at pinhole stuff. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say this last thing. I want to salute you guys both for keeping this art form alive. I think it's worthy of keeping it going. I like to see that more people are becoming interested in it.
Yes. Well, since I've got involved, I'm amazed, particularly with the Facebook group. See how many false starts we have to this podcast? I'm amazed at how many people are actually creating just beautiful art using pinholes. I think this is a thing that's, I mean, I've been shooting pinholes for years, but never really got fully engaged until I joined Corey on the podcast. But, you know, the people out there who are just, I'm just constantly inspired daily by the people that post stuff on the Facebook group.
That's great. I it shows that you know, there's this resurgence in the art form. So I think that's great, and it is truly unique aspect of photography. And that's kind of what drew me there in the beginning, is that there's nothing else like it. Nothing.
Yep.
And it cannot be recreated via a After Effect or whatever in your phone or whatever. So I like that you have to make a pinhole.
There's only
one way, right?
Cool.
All right, gentlemen. Okay.
And next time I'm in San Diego, I'll meet up with you and Dave Eichinger, and we'll have a beer.
Sounds good. All right, guys, have a great day.
Have a good weekend, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.